Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Happy Friday morning, everybody, and on government shutdown day three. Let's do two things to begin the program. Let's take a closer look at one of the Republican tactics that Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul accidentally revealed in an open mic moment yesterday. Oops. We'll play that clip in a minute. And an example of how one Republican member of Congress used it on this program yesterday. We'll also ask who's winning this political MMA moment, the Tea Party or everyone else. And let's continue for the third day in a row on the program to crowdsource the shutdown's effects in our area. If you are furloughed or if you are affected in any way, either as a government employee or as an American trying to use government services, or if you're seeing this around you, please call in 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. As I said yesterday, our reporters can't get into every nook and cranny of federal government services, so this continues to be a story ripe for crowdsourcing. So crowd, be our sources. If you are furloughed or if you are affected in any way, either as a government employee or as an American trying to use government services, please call in 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. We compiled some of the calls that have come in so far over the last 2 days into this 30-second montage.
I'm an Army reservist. We're unable to conduct our inactive duty for training.
I work for a craft brewery. We're unable to get new labels approved.
The cost of actually closing down, opening up.
Basically, we're missing out on shipping a bunch of orders.
The fact that we can't do long-term contracting because we only have a month or two at a time.
We're out of work.
This has been extremely unsettling to me, to be unemployed, essentially, albeit for just 2 days.
We've been told that we shouldn't expect to get paid for the time that we're not working.
It's been this way for years, and it's just getting more and more difficult.
Some of you who called in there in the last 2 days on the effects of the government shutdown in our area, let's keep crowdsourcing the story here on shutdown day three. Here is, or I should say, how is the government shutdown affecting you or anything in our area? We have One very minor way from in-house this morning, as it turns out. Producer Jody Evergon was scheduled to run an ultimate frisbee clinic for local high school players this weekend at a sports complex in Brooklyn. This complex, which is privately run, happens to be on the grounds of Floyd Bennett Field near Jamaica Bay. Floyd Bennett Field is run by Gateway National Recreation Area, which is part of the National Park Service. National parks are shut down. The Gateway National Recreation Area is closed. No one is there to man the gate at Floyd Bennett Field, and so the privately run sports complex has to shut down, hence no frisbee clinic. So there's one tiny impact of the government shutdown. Tell us yours, 212-433-9692. And while your calls are coming in, we'll talk to Slate correspondent Dave Weigel. Hi, Dave. Welcome back to WNYC. Dave, we got you. I can't hear you. We lost Dave? All right. And we're going to begin with something that Dave wrote up. We'll get him back on the phone here in just a second. He wrote up, and this is how I learned about it, in his article, a Rand Paul, Mitch McConnell open mic moment. And we're going to set this up a little bit before we play the audio, because they're whispering in this clip about the Democrats refusing to negotiate on tying Obamacare to the budget, right? That's been the president's position, Harry Reid's position. We won't negotiate about tying Obamacare to the continuing resolution just to keep the government open. So listen closely. They say that this is a bad strategy for the Democrats, and they're going to keep talking about compromise as their buzzword. And as I say, listen closely, because they do talk in that top secret, hush-hush, spy-to-spy tone of voice when Rand Paul comes over and says, I just did CNN, even though the first thing you hear is McConnell clearly saying that he's mic'd up.
Do you have a second?
I'm all wired up here.
I just did CNN. I just go over and over again, we're willing to compromise, we're willing to negotiate. I don't think they poll tested we won't negotiate. I think it's awful for them to say that over and over again.
Yeah, I do too. And I just came back from a two-hour meeting with him, and that was basically the same view privately as it was publicly.
I think if we keep saying we wanted to defund it, we fought for that, but now we're willing to compromise on this, I think they can't. I know we don't want to be here, but we're going to win this, I think.
We're going to win this, I think, whispers Rand Paul to Mitch McConnell, not intending to be on WPSD Channel 6 in Kentucky. But they were, because the mic was open. Dave Weigel from Slate is our guest, and I think we can hear him now. Dave, you there?
I'm here.
Thanks for doing this. And I realized upon seeing that video in your story that we had an example of the strategy attempted on this program yesterday. It was New Jersey Congressman Scott Garrett, and he was trying to make exactly that point, that the Democrats won't compromise and the Republicans will. So he listed some of the smaller changes to Obamacare that they're now willing to accept rather than delaying the whole thing. And I followed up by asking him this about why he doesn't think the government shutdown tactic is beyond the pale. This is a minute and a half clip, and it begins with my question. You don't like Obamacare. Lots of people from different parties in Congress don't like different laws. But to hold up the budget and shut down parts of the government over a policy dispute, why don't you consider that beyond the pale?
Well, because we're not saying close down the government, and we're saying let's fund the government. And we've voted 4 or 5 times now to fund the government, and we voted now in several pieces that would fund the government. And unfortunately, the president and the Senate and Harry Reid have said they will only do one thing. They will only accept one thing. They will only vote in favor of one thing. And if we don't vote in favor of their one thing, then they're going to pack up the balls and go home.
But wait, why isn't it your side that's saying only one thing?
I can answer that very quickly.
Go ahead.
We have not said one thing. As I said a minute ago, we said, here's option A. Don't like that. Here's option B. Don't like that. Here's option C. Don't like that. Here's option D. Don't like that.
Right.
Here's some other ones. I'm not exactly sure. I have to ask you a question. Why did you say we are only asking for one thing when you've heard Republicans say repeatedly that we are offering 3 or 4 things? I'm just curious, why do you phrase it in that manner?
Because all of the things that you listed are, in one way or another, tying the continuing budget resolution to changes in Obamacare. So there was part of my exchange yesterday with Republican Congressman Scott Garrett. Dave Weigel from Slate is with us. And Dave, I think we heard that example from Garrett as being exactly what Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell were whispering about.
You know, there's an expression that the media critic Eric Ultimate, I first heard come up with a decade ago. He was referring to the way the conservatives work generally with the media, and he referred to it as working the refs. They try to frame something as biased by the way the press covers it, and in doing so encourage the press to not cover it like that, to say there are both sides to this story. And I think the examples you usually come up with was support for the Iraq war or climate change, but you have this kind of Petri dish example here where to most people who have covered, you know, let's say you're a reporter who was alive in 2011. You remember in 2011 that Republicans did ask for lots of cuts in the CR, but they were willing to fund Obamacare. They're now not willing to fund Obamacare. For most of us, it feels like, well, they've made the demand. They're the aggressors, for lack of a better term. And what Garrett was doing, and I think what Paul was describing he just done on the air, is just kind of working the refs and making the media feel guilty about covering Republicans as aggressors. And if it feels kind of disconnected from reality and very meta, well, it is.
Is the general public engaged enough, in your opinion? I mean, our listeners, most of our listeners probably knew exactly what was going on there. That it's still about this tactic of shutting down the government as leverage to change Obamacare, change it through version A, change it through version B, version C, version D, all the things he said. But is the general public engaged enough to get the talking point of, you know, quote, they won't compromise and we will? Is Rand Paul right in thinking that talking point is their ticket, as he said in the open mic clip?
No, if you look at local press coverage, front pages around the country, you know, go to the Newseum's website, you can check them every day. That's not how they're leading the story. I mean, that's not how the AP or the Gannett or the McClatchy, whoever they use, are running with the story. It's getting out there on social media, and there is a real confidence that the growth of social media since the shutdown in 95 is going to, you know, to use a cliche that we used too much in Washington, change the game. You know, there was no Drudge Report to speak of in 1995-96. There was no Daily Caller. There was no Fox News to speak of. So they have a kind of word engine, thought engine working on their side, describing what Republicans think is happening, or like to think is happening. They have not really penetrated the rest of the press because, I mean, quite honestly, this isn't the Capitol Hill Press Corps, not to disparage the campaign press corps, but it doesn't cover these issues as ping pong between one side saying X and the other side saying Y. You've got people who covered the budget for a very long time, and they know exactly what's happening, so they are covering it as Republicans making a demand and making a series of demands in the hope of getting something that they've never asked before.
Let's take some of the phone calls from people calling in to say how the government shutdown is affecting them, either as government employees or as Americans who need government services, and then we'll get back to some of the political analysis. My guest, Dave Weigel from Slate, who's been writing multiple times a day, I should say, about this at Slate.com. Derek in Highland Park, you're on WNYC. Hi, Derek.
Hi, how are you doing? I coach the varsity rowing team at the U.S. Merchant Marine Academy in Kings Point. As of today, the students are being sent home at their own expense. The academy's being shut down academically. All the sports teams have stopped. And the academic year is in jeopardy because everything is being pushed back because of the shutdown.
How many students is that?
There's something over 900 students. There is as many as 1,000 at different times. So aside from my team, which has been training for the last 2 months, for the last few weeks of the season to compete, all their athletic dreams have kind of been just pulled up from underneath them. But more academically, the whole year is in jeopardy, and we don't know when the school year is going to continue.
Let's see. If you call somebody at the Naval Academy a midshipman, what do you call somebody studying at the Merchant Marine Academy?
We're midshipmen.
You are also?
Yeah, they train to be merchant seamen, but 25% of them will enroll and go active duty. They train to be active seamen upon graduation, and they have a Naval Reserve commitment once they graduate.
How do you and your midshipmen feel about this?
Oh, they're terribly frustrated because they have no control. They're being told they don't know when the academic season or the academic year will continue. They want to stay at the academy, but there's no academics happening. There's no athletics. So they're pretty frustrated.
Is it politicizing them in any way that you can tell?
I haven't spoken to them about politics. I think they're pretty much, I don't want to speak for them, but I think pretty much it's kind of a disgust with what's going on in Washington and, you know, a disappointment that the decisions that a few are making has affected, you know, many.
The disgust doesn't run toward one side or the other of the aisle as far as you could tell?
I don't know.
Yeah. Derek, thank you for calling, and good luck to you, and good luck to all the midshipmen. I hope you all get back real soon.
Thanks for bringing exposure to the whole situation, and appreciate it.
Richard in Cold Spring, you're on WNYC. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Brian. How are you? I love your show.
Long-time listener. Thank you. What's happening?
Well, my wife works at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and, you know, obviously, personally, when you're used to two incomes, that hurts you, but sort of on a larger scale, you look at the effect that it has for the cadets themselves. She's, you know, in an educational component working in the library, and the library, you know, most of the library staff has been furloughed at this point. So you have to wonder how that's impacting, you know, the education for the cadets and the cadets overall, how they're suffering from the shutdown.
So your wife is a civilian librarian at West Point?
Yeah, she's a cadet librarian, yes.
And what other services does she tell you are being affected?
You know, obviously there's ancillary issues there when you have a large institution like West Point that people go out, they go to the delis, they shop in the area. If they're not at work, then they're not doing those things, so you have this ripple effect. I don't know. I had heard rumors that the football game wouldn't be happening this weekend. I don't know if that's actually true or not. But
now that'll break the back of the shutdown.
I know that brings in a lot of money for the athletics program. We go to the games. We're big supporters of the team. I know, you know, we see the checks presented and things like that at the games, and the attendance is way up, and, you know, it's a great time. But obviously there's impacts across the board to them because a lot of people there have been furloughed.
Richard, thank you for your call. I really appreciate it. Dave Weigel from Slate, I think those are two fascinating examples that we just had come in on the phone. They're both military-related. I would imagine that that would make the thing very, very unpopular in certain conservative circles in a way that maybe closing the national parks, you know, or the Frisbee training session might not move hearts and minds. And if he's right that the West Point football game might actually get delayed tomorrow, I don't know. We should check newsroom. We should check that out. Then, you know, it starts to rise to a whole other level in the culture, I think.
I think it does, but the strategy on the Republican side when they hear stories like that is to basically blame anything that sounds bad in the media as Obama overreaching and his government demanding the shutdown of essential-seeming or popular-seeming things just to increase the pain, as they do with sequestration, too. Anything that was cut by sequestration that was a negative story, they said it was because the administration was trying to maximize the pain. Hard to actually prove them. I mean, they were given pretty close instructions to just cut. So that is why you're seeing them try to pass a bunch of small bills and then tell people they've done their part to get rid of name of popular seeming thing. And for the first day it was World War II Memorial. The second day it was the National Institutes of Health because there was a negative story about children not getting cancer treatments. Tomorrow, you know, today it could be midshipmen. And it's very reactive to the news, and I saw an action. I was at the World War II Memorial on Wednesday when a bunch of Republicans kind of helped open the gate for World War II veterans who weren't really being pushed back, and they were allowed in. There were people heckling the members of Congress demanding they do their job, and they were saying, we did our job. We passed a bill to fund the veterans, as if, all right, that was it. Doesn't matter. Any other part of the government, HUD doesn't matter. The academies don't matter, et cetera, et cetera. As soon as something becomes unpopular to cut, then they'll move to cut it. That is their strategy in the short term for avoiding political blame for this.
And according to our crack sports department, the Army-Navy game, as far as we knew last night, is still on for tomorrow. William in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, William.
Hello, how are you?
Good. What do you do?
I'm a lawyer with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency in New York City, and I just wanted to tell you about two matters I was working on before the furlough. One was we recently discovered a site in New Jersey where thousands of abandoned drums and containers with hazardous substances were discovered. I was involved in the legal side of it. We were going in on basically an emergency basis because the people in the area drink the water. There's a federally protected wetlands in the area. And so I was involved in the legal side. As of Monday, I was no longer involved in this, and I really don't know what's happening there. I assume that accepted employees will be continuing on the technical side, will be continuing to address it, but they'll be working without pay if they are.
Which I think they're not allowed to do. And later in the program, we actually have a segment that's going to be one guest less than it was originally booked a few weeks ago because it was going to include a federal employee, an archivist of all things, who now is not allowed to come on the show because this archivist is furloughed. But, William, you think that this is going to affect the environment per se? Is anybody, if you're talking about Superfund sites, is anybody at higher risk from a toxic exposure, for example, than they would have been a week ago?
Well, it may delay the cleanup there, and certainly without any legal advice, they're handicapped. Another matter I was involved in was a lawsuit involving tens of millions of dollars to recover taxpayer money that the government had to spend cleaning up a valley in New Jersey, an entire valley that had been polluted principally by one company. That lawsuit, I had initially thought that we were going to be accepted, and all day Tuesday I worked on the case, but at the end of the day Tuesday, the Department of Justice obtained a stay of litigation through the court, and we were all sent home. So, you know, as long as this furlough lasts, as long as the government is shut down, nothing's happening with that lawsuit. It's not moving forward.
William, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. By the way, just to put a point on the midshipman, maybe some of you heard and maybe some of you would like to hear WNYC reporter Dan Tucker's story after spending the day at the Merchant Marine Academy yesterday, and you can check out that story at WNYC.org. Let's hear another one as we continue to take your stories of how the government shutdown is affecting you as federal employees or as Americans wanting to use government services. Joanne in New Rochelle, you're on the air. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning. I enjoy your show when I can listen to it, which is not when I'm working.
and you're furloughed, so you can listen today?
I'm furloughed, yeah.
From?
And,
from what?
I don't represent my agency, but I work in a customer service walk-in office for people who have problems with their taxes. And they come in for things like, a lot of them for IRS documentation to prove that they had no income so they can get Section 8 housing assistance for people who are applying for citizenship that need tax return transcripts, people who are applying for mortgages. So there's like so many people that from all walks of life that we assist, and I'm sure the phone lines are not being manned, and we have a website, but you know, a lot of people prefer face-to-face assistance, and we can't give them. We had a 91-year-old lady was going to come in yesterday, and of course I told her to make sure that we're open, and we're not.
So it's not around April 15th, but some taxes are not getting paid that otherwise would have gotten paid in a timely manner.
Well, there's all kinds of things that relate to that. Yes, and October 15th is the extension deadline for filing.
Joanne, thank you very much, and good luck to you. And we're still with Dave Weigel from Slate. And, Dave, back to the politics. I see you have another piece on Slate today, in addition to the one we discussed before, headlined, Fox News poll suggests that GOP may not be completely winning shutdown fight. Just a slightly sarcastic headline. But you tell us Boehner has overtaken Reid as the least popular congressional leader, according to this Fox News poll, a 9-point drop in the percentage of Americans wanting full repeal of Obamacare. It was 39%, now 30% want repeal. And on wanting to keep Obamacare, Obamacare wins. 53% say keep it, 41% say repeal it. What do you make of these numbers?
Well, there was some of the more, I guess, cautious Republicans were fearing and what Democrats were hoping. And I saw the Republicans today are jumping on this anonymous quote by someone in the White House saying that they are winning the optics of the shutdown, which is kind of a nice, I guess, capstone to the Rand Paul Mitch McConnell quote you're saying that was on the record and on tape and on video. Obvious that Democrats, being the people who want to just fund the government like it was funded last year and the year before, are able to say this is an extraordinary measure. And voters, look, this is another thing that some Republicans are worried about. They thought that without a shutdown, the big news story this week would be trouble with the Affordable Care Act implementation, trouble with people getting online registering for the exchanges. There was some of that on day one. They didn't really get the coverage. There has been not much since. I mean, the enrollment numbers have not been huge, but there have been stories about how it's working. And there's not really, I mean, there's nothing really negative to enforce the impression that I'm at the Capitol and understandably concerned Kappa motorcycle just drove past me. Not a lot to reinforce the impression that Obamacare is falling apart, that the whole debate is based on them delaying the law because it's going to collapse under its own weight, and it hasn't yet. So the combination, I think, of the backlash to Republicans and the reality of the first couple days of the program starting with a stutter but otherwise going okay.
And today it's the government shutdown. By October 17th, it'll be the debt ceiling deadline with the possibility of the United States government defaulting on its debts. I think the big news from Speaker Boehner in the last day is he's quoted by multiple sources saying he won't let the government default. Does that mean that he won't play two games of chicken with the economy and people's lives at the same time? And does it mean that he is starting to see this as a losing strategy for his party?
Well, there are two audiences for that quote. The most immediate audience that he was actually meeting with were some of the more moderate Republicans who are not inclined to go along with any of these strategies. They want a clean CR, i.e. one that doesn't cut anything that's been funded already. And he's reassuring them that if they just keep voting with the rest of the party, there's nothing to worry about. He's also making sure that message gets across to the business class, which did help elect Republicans in 2010, to a lesser extent in 2012, greater extent for Mitt Romney, lesser extent for the House, and making sure they know that he is not acting recklessly. Because another thing, speaking of working the rest, that irritates Republicans is they can't get much coverage for Barack Obama's CNBC interview where he said that businesses shouldn't be 100% confident that there won't be a default. They looked at that as Obama being completely reckless, saying something they would never say. So they're trying to look responsible. And it just, everything sort of underscores how, what a heavy carry it is for them to portray themselves as completely reasonable in negotiating, because the White House is able to talk in an almost Dirty Harry manner and get away with it a lot. I don't think they're getting, because the media doesn't cover them fairly. The media is, I think, in response to this anonymous quote I mentioned, the media is having its fun with it. It's just not symmetrical to the Republicans starting the fight in the first place.
One more story from Furlough Nation. Denise in Edison, you're on WNYC. Hi, Denise.
Hi, Brian. How you doing?
Good.
I work in the federal judiciary, and I'm a essential employee, so I'm actually working right now and typing up something as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
We are funded through October 11th, and then after that we go on non-paid work status, meaning that I have to work even though I'm not going to get paid.
So some so-called essential employees would have to work even though you're not getting paid. Others are not allowed to work for free and have to go home for the length of the furlough.
No, I'm one of those that would have to work,
yeah,
whether I'm paid or not.
And do you see the federal court system as shutting down to any degree? Will cases not be able to go forward? Will the Supreme Court justices hear their cases? Their term starts on Monday?
I can't answer for the whole system, but as far as I know, in New Jersey, we're standing ahead. There's no indication that we're going to get shut down. As a for example, we continued through the summer despite the fact that the Federal Public Defender's Office, which they do a phenomenal job, but they spent many a Friday over the summer on furlough status, not being able to work as a result of the sequestration. And the courts continued, and those folks lost 20% of their salary over the summer.
Right.
They are considered essential, too, from what I understand, and they will continue working on a non-paid status like the rest of us. I mean, on a non-paid status after the
11th of October. So good luck in your job or your volunteer work, as the case may be, Denise.
My son called it slave labor, but...
Denise, thank you for your call. And I want to encourage everybody to keep posting your stories to our webpage. If you are personally affected as a furloughed employee or somebody like Denise is going to have to keep working but for free, or if you're an American who's just trying to access government services that you can't access right now, because as I said before, we can't get into every nook and cranny of the federal government with our reporting team. So this is perfect for crowdsourcing. So please help keep helping us report this story at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Use that comments page. Or if it's short enough, you can just tweet at Brian Lehrer as this goes on. And so there you go. On day four, and I apologize earlier in the segment, I was saying day three of the government shutdown, the fog of political war clouded up my brain enough that I didn't update my template from yesterday's show. So that was day three. Today is day four. We thank Dave Weigel, Slate correspondent. We will see what happens, and obviously we will keep following it. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, still to come today. What does it mean to be Jewish? Jane Eisner from the Jewish Daily Forward will be here with some surprising survey results. Young Jews increasingly say they're Jewish but don't believe in Judaism. She'll explain. 30 issues in 30 days. Issue 10 coming up. Emergency response as an issue in the mayoral race. Tom Robbins and Jerry Capecci on their book, Mob Boss, The Life of Little Al Diarco, the man who brought down the mafia. And we'll preview tomorrow's Festival of Medical History and the Arts, including a clip from a 1940s Navy training film starring Gene Kelly and why they didn't call it post-traumatic stress syndrome then after World War II. Stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.